Yes. Yes, Cymru Radio. Yes. Radio Free Wales.
Yes. Hello and welcome to another issue of Radio Yes Cymru podcast and also on YouTube. And joining me, Sean Robbins, today is Dr. John Ball, former lecturer at Swansea University. But they like you so much, John. I understand you tried to retire, but you're coming back again to do some work for them. But obviously today, speaking in a personal capacity. So, John, you've been involved with the independence movement for decades, if I may say.
Longer than I care to remember. Yeah,
and very keen to obviously promote the different arguments for independence, including the economic one. So joining us today from your studio down in Swansea. So welcome, John. Welcome to the podcast. The simple question, John, you know I'm going to ask you this. Can Wales afford independence?
Well, the answer, of course, is yes. What's really interesting with all the numbers that have been kicked about by various organisations is we are actually paying our way. It's very interesting. Once you start looking at the figures and start lifting out some of the allocations to us in terms of the figures that are produced by ONS, we are actually paying our way. We have a very small deficit once you do the adjustments, but we are paying our way. Let me make it clear, that's all we're doing. I think that's worth pointing out.
Yeah.
But we are definitely paying our way as things are today in 2023.
Right. So obviously people listening to Radio Yes Cymru podcast and in part of the independence movement will be aware there are different reports about, I think, Cardiff University produced one, and other institutions. Some say our deficit was something like 13%. Others say it's more like 7. Another one's closer to the sort of 3. So I think John Doyle from Ireland. Yeah. So what you're saying is basically that the issue, the one published by Plaid Cymru recently, I think it's Professor John Doyle from Dublin, he sort of said, you know, there is a small deficit, but you know, it's marginal. It's about 3, 4, or 5%. And you sort of concur with that, don't you, John?
Actually, I think the deficit is much smaller.
Right.
Much smaller. Let me quickly sort of review this. The figures published by ONS include allocations to the Welsh economy, well, to Wales, on the basis that Wales is part of the UK economy. For example, as a part of the UK economy, we contribute to defence, for example. As a part of the UK economy, we contribute to overseas aid, all kinds of things like this, okay? But once you start taking those out, because, for example, there's no way we would pay £2 billion for defence. That's actually 10% of revenue, you know, not just 2% of GDP. Yep. It's utter nonsense. Once you start taking these figures out and saying, hey, we're not paying that. Pensions is the big issue. That, of course, would be paid by a residual England because they have already been paid in, as indeed Doyle pointed out. Now, when you take out these extraneous figures because we are part now of the UK economy, I calculate the current deficit to be about £500 million, which is about 0.5% of GDP. The figures are—I'll happily publish. In fact, I'm happy to publish the figures because I disagree with Doyle. I think he's left some bits in that I wouldn't leave in. But I think the issue here, though, is whether I'm right or Doyle is right. The deficit is actually quite small. Both of us agree that we are paying our way, and that's very, very important.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, as you say, we're paying for stuff we don't get, or certainly not spent in Wales. There's a question with pensions, but as you say, yeah, the pension, well, this is come to that now then. So the big argument is because Wales has an aging population, an older population, so Cardiff is fairly well balanced, but outside of Cardiff and maybe part of the M4 corridor is an aging population. That is an issue for all people across Europe, across the Western world. What you're saying is, you know, if someone has been employed in what would an independent Wales, what would be an independent England, then their pensions are paid from the what would then be the English Chancellery.
That's right.
And not by the Welsh Chancellery. So, right, so that's how you sort of get around that.
I think there are three issues here. I think the first is, I've already said we're paying our way. That's quite important.
Yeah.
There are two other issues here. There is no question in my mind. I'm not a lawyer, but certainly I've looked into this, as indeed as Doyle, in fairness. The residual English government has a legal statutory duty to pay the pensions to those who have paid in. That's perfectly clear. Anyone starting work in an independent sovereign Welsh state would, of course, not qualify for that. That's a given. But clearly the legal interpretation is that the rump English government would be required to pay pensions to those in Wales who have already paid in. But there is another dimension here, and I'm being very careful again. There's some very interesting figures being knocked about, private pensions.
Yeah, so that's good.
I hate this word private pensions. It gives the idea of all being, investing in the Cayman Islands or something. The reality of it is that by an accident of the economics of Wales over the last 30, 40 years, nationalised industries, the government, public sectors, people like me, dare I say, have got pretty good pensions. Yeah. Now, the figures published were something like 77% of those of pensionable age in Wales today are in receipt of a private pension. Now, I've said this elsewhere. I'm not suggesting for a second that those who've got private pensions would not get the pensions, the public pensions, if you like. They're quite clearly entitled to them. But this idea that somehow we're all going to starve because there won't be pensions to pay to anyone is utter nonsense. And I think this is something our enemies were saying, it happened in Scotland. Who will pay the pensions? They'll be paid either or. A combination of private pensions or indeed the legal requirement for the rump English state to pay pensions into which we have paid. That is perfectly clear.
Right. So let me just try and clear this up. The private pensions, many people have a combination of both because the state pension is quite low in the UK, something which people don't point out. So if the private pensions, would be, one assumes, sort of because these companies are very often transnational in any case, and they would be, you paid into them over 20, 30, 40 years, and that's sort of done. So I think we can park that. So whatever your private pension is, that's sorted with standard life or whatever. Fine.
Yes, absolutely.
State pension, and I understand, someone, let's say, for the sake of argument, has worked in, let's say, London all their life. They retire to Wales when they're, like, say, 60. They get the bulk of their pension then from what would then be the English Exchequer, and then a part then from the Welsh Exchequer. So am I right to say that? And if so, saying the argument, 10 years after, depends, the Welsh pension goes up. They decide to say, we can pay more pension. People deserve it or whatever. Were those people who spent most of their life working, let's say, in England or outside, whatever that be, Germany, Spain, would they get the full benefit of the Welsh pension, or would they only be...
No. That would be a matter for our national treasurer. I'm not going to go to... I hate these phrases like chancellor, that sort of nonsense. This will be a matter for our national treasurer. But again, the law is perfectly clear. My parents-in-law, for example, who retired some years ago, went to live in Spain. They've now returned. His pension, her pension, were paid by the UK government, not by the Spanish government. Now, the same applies here. Those who worked in England, shall we say, emigres, if you like, would come into Wales, as is the case now, their pension would be paid by the English Exchequer. Incidentally, anything up to a third of the cost allocated to us for pensions, by the way, now, is for those who've moved into Wales, and that would, whatever happens to pensions, they would continue to be paid by the rump English government anyway. Oh no, that's perfectly clear. You pensions are paid by the state which took the money, if you like. So somebody working in England who came to say and live in Aberystwyth, and he or she would be paid the pension by the English government, not by us.
Say after independence, the Vienna Convention, the distribution of state assets. So the UK ceases to exist as a state. So Westminster could say we are the successor state to the UK, which is basically England, which is what essentially Russia did for the USSR. They get all the assets, and then they have to pay us off, because obviously we paid into that as someone in marriage would or whatever. So if they decide, we don't want to be the rump state, we'll actually give you some money, and we'll just divide equally. You think that would also make things okay I think actually England would want to be the successor state. But you think that would also work out for us in terms of, the money is actually allocated?
I think there's some interesting issues here. Again, it would be part of negotiation for a national treasurer. But there are a number of issues here. Clearly, there would be some discussion on, to some extent, our allocation to the national debt, for example.
Yeah.
Now, that's a fairly emotive issue, but I suspect we would have to make some kind of contribution. Assets would be split, as was the case between Czechia and Slovakia.
Yeah.
Not forgetting, we have assets here in terms of public assets, the DVLA, Companies House, the Mint, for example. These would probably come to us. But I think all this will be a matter of negotiation. It's difficult to, you know, hang a hat on this, other to remind ourselves that we do have assets here which are public assets, like the Royal Mint, which would almost certainly remain and would become a property of a Welsh government. It's the big issue is going to be things. The biggest issue is going to be the national debt. Of that is no question. There'll be a lot of emotion in that.
Right. So, but if England is the successor state, they take all the assets, which includes the national debt, which means that Wales or Scotland starts day one with no debt at all. But obviously England keep all the airfields abroad and everything like that. But we get some kind of payment. So if England decides to be the successor state, I understand, then they take out all the assets and includes the debt as well. So that could also be quite a beneficial situation for Wales to start.
That's a rather neat situation, because if the successor state, I like that phrase, if the successor state takes everything outside the borders of Cymru, yeah, then thank you very much. I'm easy with this. If we did contribute to the national debt, we're probably talking about something like 2 billion a year. By the way, again, if I may, for our listeners and viewers, I want to bury this one too. Some years ago, I was asked by a reporter of the Western Mail, how would we fund the 5% of this massive national debt that's been run up over the years? The answer to that, of course, is nobody does. No country actually pays off its national debt. Whatever the arguments about this, what is being paid is interest. And on the basis of 5% of the national debt, we'd be asked to contribute something like two and a half billion, which I wouldn't be prepared to pay, for the record. But if the successor state said, look, here, we're taking the airfields and the embassies and everything else, well, thank you very much, off you go. We'll keep the Royal Mint and the DVLA and Companies House. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the issue is
quite laid back about this.
Part of the problem, of course, is the Tories have sold so many of the UK's assets. There's actually far fewer left now than there were 20, 30, 40 years ago. So that is
genuine. Actually, somebody once mentioned to me that we should be, that maybe I'm being a slightly flippant here, that at the end of the day, things like the crown jewels and all this paraphernalia of the royal family is worth a few zillions. Maybe we should be negotiating for a chunk of that. I don't know. I think, to me, that's a bit in the air for the moment.
Okay, so this brings us on to the other issue, which is to do with the currency. No, I'll tell you what, we'll leave the currency for just one moment. Let's go to the back. Just go to the, you know, it's the picture I have in mind, you know, water's coming in, water's going out, or money's going in, money's going out. So what you're saying, there's a small deficit, which is, in terms of international trade, negligible, and all countries have similar, or many countries, most countries have similar kind of deficit. That can also be sorted with things like issuing national bonds or something like that for the state. So Jutta, in terms of, if we're doing nothing else, we're paying our way. Now, the argument made by opponents of independence is, yeah, that's fine, because at the moment, nothing changes. You know, you can drive over to Shrewsbury or whatever, or they can go, you know, there is no disruption. But independence would, by definition, be some kind of change in scenario or disruption, depends how you want to see it, or opportunity. Otherwise, there's no point having it. You know what I mean? This is literally a point. So, I mean, how would you factor in, okay, to put it in inverted commas, the opportunity or the disruption which independence would cause?
Do you mean, let me answer this in two ways. One is financial and one is social, if you like. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I think the important thing about a sovereign state of the size of Wales is that we have the opportunity to choose. We can decide what we're going to tax or we're not going to tax. Now, this is quite important. Other small countries have looked at other ways of taxing without hurting people, for want of a better phrase. And I've done some work, in fact, in fairness, our colleagues at Bangor University have done this, for example. We could look at novel taxes like land value tax. which some economists have argued would be worth anything up to $6 billion to the Welsh Exchequer. We should be looking at things like tourist taxes. We have a substantial tourist industry, but nobody pays any tourist tax. That could be worth anything up to $2 or $3 billion.
Would it really?
I've said, bear with me, I've suggested changing company tax. That's a bit of a story for another day. Yeah. In a nutshell, what I'm saying is this. We are a small nation, a small country, with the opportunity to amend taxation as we see fit, yeah, just as other countries are. For example, in Estonia, for example, they have what's called a flat tax. Everyone pays exactly the same level of tax after a set amount of money. It's one of the reasons the economy is growing so quickly, incidentally. But the important thing, sorry, is in its sense of regional revenue, is we have the choices to make. Now, there's another side to this. What excites me about what's happening now is to look at places like Estonia. Is to look at places like Finland. I've been privileged to teach in Finland. Small European countries are able to spend the tax in the way they wish to do. For example, if we stayed with the $2 billion that we are currently paying for nuclear defence, that's an awful lot of teachers, that's an awful lot of hospitals, that's an awful lot of doctors. If you look at the evidence from Europe, whether we're looking at access to medical professions, for example, or education standards, or even the UN's happiness index, which I think is very quite strange in its way. Small nations tend to be prosperous because, one, they sort out their tax, and two, that tax is spent in a socially responsible way.
There's a lot of issues coming up from there, and it's to do with the kind of ways we want. So, I mean, that's some people that maybe have different kind of views of that. You talk about, okay, there's money we can spend. At the moment, our tax regime is more geared towards an UK-wide, almost, yes, really Southeast England-wide. I'm saying that as a dispassionate, just to make the point. So there's a lot of taxation done through income tax, whereas the income in Wales is lower. So to use that kind of model wouldn't bring in the same kind of money we want. And this is, again, the argument used by people who oppose independence, because they're using, well, this is how much you get from income tax. It's only 1,000 people who earn over £1 million or whatever in Wales, you can't make it. So we would have to, by definition, I think, look at different ways of taxation and different kind of taxation. You punted in the tourist tax. I'm not so sure if that brings in £2 billion. That sounds high to me, if you're talking about £1 amount a day. But in any case, land value, I think, is a very good tax.
Yes.
It also means, because you can't move land. So you can't screw it away in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. It's interesting that the First Minister, Mark Drakeford, apparently is quite keen on a land value tax. So it's obviously got some. It's running now.
Yes, and it's a good tax also for avoiding people being able to then buy land banks. So people buying chunks of land just outside the town, waiting for the county council to build the school, to build the hospital,
to build the shops, and then the
price of their land has gone up by 10%. Right. And they've done actually nothing. So land value tax is a good tax system, which should make more use of. So we're saying, you know, Wales at the moment is already paying its way as it is. Pension-wise, isn't such a big issue, though it is emotive because it exactly touches on people who are not of working age or they're about to retire and when it starts up. But basically, if people have worked most of their life outside Wales, in England or Scotland or whatever it may be, their pension is paid for by that state, then any private pension is basically taken care of because it's to do with company law. We then have the issue then of, this expenditure, which Wales doesn't really need or value from, a huge defence expenditure, which is also over-calculated. So basically, Wales isn't paying so much, 2%, which you need to expect. We're paying more like 10% in part, according to some of these situations. So we've come now on to the one to do with currency, which is the one which a lot of people in Scotland, if people listen to the Robin McAlpine discussion radio that I had with Robin about 2 or 3 weeks ago, very, very interesting conversation about the situation there post Sturgeon. And he made a point, you know, that one, the lack of clarity over the currency was a big problem in the referendum in 2014. He was adamant there'd have to be an independent Scottish pound. Because unless you have an independent currency, you can't raise the money you want. So So what's your views here on the currency? And this is one of the big things which we discussed. I am totally agnostic on currency. I understand the argument. From personal point of view, I don't care if we use sterling or euro or Welsh pound.
Well, we can use shells on the beach if it comes to that. Right. Before we go quickly, I'd like to comment quickly on income tax, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about raising taxation, people don't like paying income tax. That's a given. But of course, there is a link between income tax and high quality employment. And that's another issue which I think
high quality employment.
High quality employment. And I think that's another issue we should be discussing in terms of where we go in an independent state, is to look at an economy not based on poverty wages and part time, but looking at an economy that is based on growth and skills, such as Estonia, Finland. These are excellent models. In fact, I'll mention Estonia in a moment when we get further on the line. Let me deal with currency. I am astonished that the Scottish Yes campaign hasn't firmly, once and for all, put its tied its flag to the mast or whatever. We can carry on using the pound sterling. There is nothing to stop us using the pound sterling. We can either be part of a currency union, which already exists, or we could, what's become known as sterlingization, where we carry on using the pound anyway. Now, there are a number of issues here, mainly that a Welsh currency, frankly, would be worthless. Let's be quite crude about this. On day one, a Welsh currency would be worthless. We have to use a hard currency to buy and sell outside the borders of our country. We have no choice. Those who believe that we can magic up our own currency are in cloud cuckoo land, frankly. It simply isn't possible. And there's a second issue here. We are dealing with the Welsh people. And the Welsh people, in their way, are quite conservative. If you tell them that from Monday morning they've got to use this funny thing called the Blodwyn or the Crydwyn or something.
I don't give that much of kind of name. I'm
in favour, by the way, if we ever
But that's the kind of thing the anti-independence people would use.
Yeah, no, bear with me. The currency would be worthless. I mean, look, maybe our supporters of independence don't want to hear this, but we've got to be honest. To suggest that on the morning of September the 1st next year, we can all rush around spending some currency somebody's never heard of and nobody wants is nonsense.
I'll give you the other side. I mean, I was in...
I'm sorry. Forgive me, John. I think we've got to be honest about this. And the Scots are not being honest about this. The people of Wales want to know what will they be using the day after independence. They will continue using the pound.
Yes, you can make that. You can say that, and you and I know that almost all the countries which became independent in the UK or most other states, for a certain period of time, it could be a few months, it could be a few years, even whatever the old currency was. So I was in Slovakia in 1993. When they just become independent, a year before, on split from Velvet divorce with Czech lands, they were still using literally Czechoslovak paper, but with the Slovak motif on, and they're in transition again, new currency mount in. I think Israel was using sterling for years before going over to the shekel. And you know, this is quite common. So I mean, so you could make the argument that, okay, there would be a Welsh currency. I'm making this argument, not John Paul. But for the first 18 months, 2 years, we're using sterling.
Yes.
So people know, okay, day after independence, it's sterling.
I think.
A year after independence, it's probably still sterling. After that, then there maybe is different currency. Is that something you suggest or not?
There is an argument here that people say to me, well, what about places like Norway, Sweden, Slovakia? They are very, very rich economies. Their economy is booming. They can support their currency. There is no way that the Welsh economy is booming by any stretch of the imagination. Yes, we can have our own currency 5-10 years down the line when we have a rich, healthy, booming, growing economy and people actually want to use the Blodwyn, the Crydwyn, or whatever it's going to be.
But it's not going to be a stupid name.
Over the time, the answer is no.
Yeah. There's going to be something. There's going to be called something like a pound. So let's not give it a pejorative kind of funny name. Not there's nothing.
No, actually, just for the record, I've suggested if we ever had a currency, I like the word Ariannwen, the old word.
It would be called.
Which I think is a lovely word.
It would be called a pint or whatever. So you're leaving the door slightly ajar here. So what you're saying is there would be a Welsh, the day after independence, we're using sterling.
Yes.
12 months after independence, it's probably still sterling.
Yes.
18 months or something, it could be a different currency. And if that's the case, are you in favour of a different currency in any as principle? We'll come to that. So that's answered the question. So you basically said, with independence, we'd have our own different armed forces and stuff like that, but we'd still be using the pound sterling.
We have no choice.
Okay. The argument I hear, and this is what Robin McAlpin was saying a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, was, without doing currency, you can't do basically quantitative easing, which is what happened, what all states did during the COVID or whatever, for the bank crashes and stuff. So we don't have the levers of power with it as a sovereign state to actually control the sovereign, our own country. So we're still at the mercy of whatever Westminster decides its priorities. So you think that is better? So not having those levers is better than having independence currency?
Yeah, can I make this point? I think there's more nonsense talked about the role of Westminster in currency than I've ever heard. The Bank of England is independent of the Westminster government. People forget this. It suits them. There's a thing called seigniorage, for example. By using their currency, it builds their reserves. We would use the Bank of England. We would like it, but that would be our statutory national bank. It is separate from the Westminster government. I don't know where people get this idea that Westminster's fiddling away. It does not. The Bank of England is entirely separate from the Westminster government. It is advised by Westminster and will advise Westminster, just as it would advise a Welsh government and support or advise whatever needs to be done. The Bank of England is independent of government, and I think those who are peddling this stuff seem to forget that.
Well, I think they would say that it's not as independent as it can be independent when it wants to and when it doesn't. So, I mean, I think that people say there's a, we all know, and there's that people can play with words of independence and they can use it when it suits them. I think that's what people are saying. I think part of the problem is possibly it's called the Bank of England, which is a.
Oh, well, indeed, yes.
It should be the Bank of the UK.
Of course, it should.
It's been called the Bank of England. So we're saying that Wales could be a situation similar to what Luxembourg had in before the euro, where you had the Luxembourg currency was the Belgian franc. And that seems to work quite well for them. But you would be, I'm just paraphrasing here, John Ball, you'd be saying that although the idea of a Welsh currency is great, you think the cold reality of daylight is that we'd have to use the
current currency.
The Bank of England or Westminster can't stop Wales using that currency in the same way as some countries use the US dollar, even though they're not in the USA.
Well, I mean, the figures that I forget off the top of my head, I think it's 11 use the US dollar, 5 use the euro. There's a whole raft of nation states that do not have their own currency.
Yeah, well, Kosovo, I think, uses the euro, doesn't it?
As you mentioned, Luxembourg, of course, because they used the Belgian franc and then, of course, started using the euro. There's another issue here, which you touched on in your question, that was raising funds. I'd like to put this to bed as well, if I may. I seem to recall, Sean, that you took part in a debate with Carwyn Jones some years ago.
Yeah,
he said to you, a separate Welsh state would not be able to raise currency on the open market, which only goes to show that he knows absolutely nothing about economics. I've said this in the talks. I'm one of these infuriating people that checks things. It's one of my character defects. When he said this, I went off and did something silly. I went and contacted the central banks of Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Czechia, and Slovakia. I contacted them. I had a chat with the bankers. And they said no. On day one, they had absolutely no problem at all in raising international finance. And these were states that were part of the Soviet system, without any history of the market, with a currency nobody wanted, with no sort of growth or any, you know, totally different culture, totally different economy. All of them were able to raise money on the international markets, and we would be in the same situation.
And we would be in a far stronger situation. We wouldn't be looking at, you know, total economic collapse, which is...
That's the other side.
And also we have absolutely amazing assets, non-transferable assets.
Oh, absolutely.
Like your argue water and your electricity killer.
Well, we've, again... sorry, I'm taking slight advantage of the opportunity here just to make these points, and forgive me. Because there's another issue. Interestingly enough, Estonia was able to access gold reserves, which have probably been tucked away somewhere. Quite an interesting story. I did some numbers on this, and the gold and currency reserves currently held by the Bank of England, if we assumed our simple 5%, we would be somewhere between, because these things got money down, these reserves, somewhere between 5 and 7 billion pounds sterling would be our share of the international currency reserves. So we'd be well away.
Yes, and I know, yes, Estonia managed to get rid of the gold just before the Russian occupation.
And tucked it away somewhere.
It's just Sweden, and they actually made a film.
The Romans took all ours.
Well, they actually made a feature film. It was one of the first feature films they made after independence. Is about the it's based like a bank heist kind of theme. That's based around the gold bullion coming back to Estonia, and someone tried to steal it. So it's a feature film. Infuriatingly, most of the films in black and white because the director decides to be arty. Then it goes to colour when the bullion arrives, something like that. That's a bit naff, but it was interesting to see the film back in,
that's good
in chapter 1994 or something. So let me just sort of recap. You're listening to Sean Jobbins here on Radio Yes Cymru, talking to Dr. John Ball, economist, recently retired, but he's been dragged back in, kicking and screaming to Swansea University to do a bit more work. But obviously talking here independently and of his own accord as a strong supporter of independence. So to recap, yes, Wales can become independent. We're raising and spending basically what we are now. So, I mean, vaguely, the size of the Welsh economy is something like £75 billion.
75.7 or something,
Right. So, I mean, that's which to give people like context is similar to, per head, to Spain, Portugal, South Korea. You know, this is quite a standard. So we're in that situation already. Pensions essentially are paid from where people have earned their money. So if people have moved into Wales, the home country for like pays that state pension. Private pensions obviously is something which should just carry on, I think. There would be some stuff we wouldn't be spending on, one looks maybe at the armaments. We'll go and discuss NATO in a minute because that's quite interesting. But there's stuff we contribute which we get nothing back. HS2 pops to mind again there, and like big expenditures. So that's sorted out. Then on currency, your argument, they have to be staying with sterling. Possibly in the future, far away future, maybe Welsh sterling, Welsh currency, if the Welsh economy is strong enough. But certainly for the first year, 2 years, probably maybe 5 years, it's sterling.
Yes.
And what you're saying is, Bank of England can't stop that and possibly wouldn't even want to stop that because, in a way, it strengthens their currency and their currency reserves.
It's called signage. They get a fee for every pound is issued. I'm not at the mechanics of it, but it suits them basically to be dishing money out.
And then the last point to make, which again is a point I don't think is made enough of, because I think some people of a certain age and think raising money implies it's a problem, but this happens all the time with states. I think I read last year that Ireland has just issued new bonds. States do this to raise money in the short term. People buy bonds and they can make some money from it. That's the intention, and they're very safe, which is why people buy bonds from countries. Obviously, the safer your country, the better the bonds are. So there's an element of risk of the independence for that individual, but that's up to them or the society. And go on to the next point then, to do with, let's touch on expenditure and to do with the military. Now, recent Melin Drafod paper on independence, I'll put a link to it on the YouTube page. They made a point that the Welsh economy was basically had the same spend on the military as the Irish Republic does, which is something like 0.7%. We're talking about something like £500 million, whatever, on the military, which isn't much, which is easily achievable. I won't go into discussion. A lot of people in Ireland think there should be more by now. Obviously, to be a part of NATO would they now require 2%. I don't know why it's quite so close, high, because, you know, the whole point of being a part of a military alliance is you can spare costs. And once Putin has been defeated and Russia has been defeated in this war, there literally is no exterior threat to the European continent at all. You know, Egypt is not going to invade Europe. Nobody else is. Brazil isn't. And Chinese aren't either. So, I mean, I don't know why it needs to be quite so high. So, okay, let's go into to the military side. So one easy way of saving money is basically we pull out of NATO, which could be a vote loser for a lot of people, or it could be made out to be a dangerous thing. I don't think it's a dangerous one, but I mean, I'm supportive of NATO. That's my position. But, you know, if we pull out of NATO, there's no need to be spending such a high amount of our income on the military. So what's your view with that? You can discuss it kind of idea scenario.
This is a very personal view, obviously, is I think the question of NATO would be a matter for the people of Wales. I'm with you on this. I suspect that the people of Wales would want to remain in NATO. I think that would probably be the case. But I think that's a matter for the people of Wales to decide. I calculate that we would actually spend somewhere like 300 million on defence, nothing like half a billion, because what we would want is a small, sophisticated, well-organised, well-trained, small military force. End of story. What bothers me a little bit is when figures like, was it 7.7% of Irish GDP is bandied about. Remember, GDP in Ireland is three times what it is in Wales. So the actual amount is actually quite large. What we would need is, as in Finland, a small, sophisticated, well-equipped military force.
And I think this is the problem people have. I mean, if he needs to stay in NATO, then it needs to be 2% of the GDP spent on.
Well,
which is a lot of money, I think.
My personal view, I would not be prepared to pay that. I mean, that's not for a country like us, or a nation like us, emerging from I'm being careful in words here, an economy that is working, but should be working harder. I'm not going to use the word poor, because we're not poor in any sense that we are not paying the bills. But for a country that then will have to start finding 2 or 3 billion out of what is less than 30 billion in revenue as things stand, is not on. It simply is not on.
Yeah. Okay, so in terms of your vision or how Wales can pay itself, that's the purpose of this discussion, is you in theory would be happy for us to stay in NATO, but certainly not be paying 2%, which is
a question. I mean, that's my personal
opinion.
Yeah, yeah. For the people of Wales, I think.
Yes. But the issue, if Wales was to stay in NATO, then there's a big chunk of money going out. And that's something. And, you know, we're probably not going to any, you know, you can make the case in the USA where they spend a lot of money on the military, that actually stays, is basically employing a lot of people in Denver, isn't it, or Ohio or something.
Indeed,
so it's essentially the American way of socialism, but they don't say that it's a Keynesian economics by the back door for America. For Wales, it's unlikely to be much spent here in Wales, so it's basically giving money away. Okay, so that's something which people need to discuss and be aware of. But there are different scenarios. There's an 2% or the Irish, I think it's 0.7%, maybe smaller, I forget now. In terms of maybe, and so again, something touched on the Merlin Drabord paper and also the Doyle paper, you know, different ways of raising income. So the tax system we have now is basically based around the idea of an economy, is essentially of Southeast England, where, you know, and that's not to say it's a bad thing, a good thing to say, you know, it's going on income tax. So you tax people with higher incomes. People say they don't tax enough or something, that's a different argument, but in a way that the incomes are slower, are smaller in any case. Yeah. So what kind of ways, creative ways, you know, sensible ways, which Wales could be generating income, which we haven't used yet.
You and I touched on this earlier on, and I think we've got to be realistic and innovative in this, right? The first and obvious one, and here we go again, is water. Now, you know, I've said this. I hope it's okay within this, because I want to make it clear I'm here as a neutral economist. But I remember many years ago when I fought an election, and I remember the then Tory candidate saying to me, he said, I suppose Mr. Ball is going to mention water. And now when I'm doing my talks, I say, yes, I'm going to mention water. Again, I'm not one of these people that shouts the odds. I've done the numbers on this. If we charged a penny a litre, remember water going to Birmingham, Liverpool and places, it's free issue, as we call it in the manufacturing. If we talk about a penny a litre, then we're talking in somewhere around 2 or 3 billion pounds. Now, there's all kinds of arguments about resources and there's all these jokes about ha-ha water, but it is a natural resource. It is saleable. The last one accounts of Severn Trent said they actually made £1 billion profit, which only goes to show what's available with water. And I'm agreeing, okay, something would need to be done with metering and some change in infrastructure, but it's water to start with. There's a great debate about electricity and Welsh Government figures, not my figures. They are producing a third more electricity than we are actually consuming, which is worth about £500 million at rates I calculated before, by the way, the Russian invasion, so it's worth more. But then we can look at other things. I'm working, even as we're talking now, on a turnover tax, which is used in many countries in Europe. Other countries use a flat tax. We can track. There is an issue of a tourist tax. There is an issue of a land value tax. There are sources of taxation which are relatively painless, but we would have the opportunity to instigate them. We would have the opportunity to look at them and say, well, what works and what doesn't work? The essential difference here, I think, is a nation the size of Wales is agile. Yeah. I think that's the word I think I would like to use. It is agility, to be able to change, to be able to think. Even when we leave and Scotland leaves, England will still be one of the 20th biggest states in the world.
Yeah.
We would be small, agile, able to change quickly. But there are any number of opportunities here. But I am, if with your permission, Sean, I am going to mention Berlin Trabert because I think their views on tax are naive. They talk about a wealth tax, for example, and they talk about income tax. I did some figures on this morning and I am absolutely astonished. 92% of those who pay income tax in Wales pay the lowest rate. 92%. 7% pay the slightly higher rate. And I think the figure is your 0.3 tenths of 1% pay the very high rate. Now, quite how we're going to tax wealth is entirely beyond me. We do not have a string of big fancy mansions around Cardiff or Newport or Swansea, where I live. And I think this is just peddling the nonsense from England. We've got to be realistic and innovative about how we raise revenue. And I repeat, maybe the biggest source of revenue, and people are not going to like this, is income tax. But that would reflect high quality employment. So there's any number of sources of revenue, of taxation, plus borrowing, of course, which we would have to do. So it's there.
So to go back to the income tax and touch quickly on the Mellon Drawer, which is the issue they raised. So obviously, one of the arguments opponents of independence would say, basically, Wales has been funded by a generosity of very rich people in England. You don't like them, the big Tory people, but they basically pay lots of income tax so you can have stuff for free. And what you're essentially saying, it's an element that's true, because we have so few very rich people here. Raising loads of money to income tax actually isn't the case.
But this is, Joe, Sean, this is a non-argument. Whether the wealthy of England are helping us out or not is not the case. We've already started this conversation by pointing out that we are paying our way. The 92% or whatever figure I quoted you, I am paying basic income tax. We are paying our way. Idea that we can just implement a wealth tax and on tax the wealthy, they ain't there, pal. They just not there.
So basically, the tax is raised here, pay for what we have.
With the taxation system we have.
So it's not the generosity of rich people in Surrey, which is paying for our schools.
It does not apply.
Right. So, I mean, let's look at the different ideas. So, I mean, I'll put a link, if I can find, to Adam Price's paper about 10 years ago, before he came back into politics, about Wales being an agile nation. And I think he made a comparison how smaller nations like Iceland bounced back after the crash of 2008, much better than many other smaller big countries did. So because they could make those changes, that the line of communication and decision making is quicker and smaller in Wales.
Absolutely.
Then we can actually make changes. So let's just do some blue sky thinking, John Ball. About you touched on some ideas of making Wales a more prosperous and a wealthier place and a happier place to live by that. So, I mean, we've touched on land value tax, which I'm glad to see the Welsh government is starting to look at, should have done years ago, because you can't move land.
Absolutely.
It's a finite resource and it stops land banks, which is something that was a big issue in Ireland after the crash. There's tourist tax. I'm going to just punt this in then. Say it's a pound for I paid tourist tax last time I went to Amsterdam, wherever I was last time. Well, actually, because you'd say in Slovakia, they had tourist tax, so I stayed there, right? So, and you really think that brings in £2 billion? Or
It brings in. It's difficult to differentiate if you look at the figures for Ireland, for example, because it's mixed up with VAT. But in Ireland, it's worth about £2 billion. But of course, I entirely accept they're much more sophisticated tourist industry than we have. But I think there is an issue here, not just in term taxation. There's an issue here, the public good, as we call it. Yes. That those who are consuming the world, consuming the environment in Wales, if you like, are not contributing. It isn't simply a question of a 1% bedroom tax. There are other issues here. The other issue, by the way, in terms of tourism, and let's move away from cold tourist tax for a minute. I put some thoughts together. It's also got to be supported with some kind of economic development policy. Last summer, I had a lovely week in Tenby with my two grandchildren. And they wanted to buy chocolate to take back from their mother. And on the front of the box was a lovely picture of Tenby. And they looked at the back and the chocolate was made in Essex. This is ludicrous. The bread on the shelf had been brought in that morning from Ireland, believe it or not, in Tenby. And I thought, this is the economics of the madhouse. Yeah, absolute madhouse. So it's not just a question of, say, a 2% bed tax. To me, it's also part of economic development that we've got to have a situation where the people are coming to Wales, they are drinking Welsh beer, they are eating Welsh chocolate, they are having Welsh sandwiches, because there is another dimension here as well. But I think the tourist industry has got to pay its way, that's what it boils down to, on the basis of a public good argument.
Yeah. Any other sort of forms of taxation or revenue you can sort of think? I mean, one thing is also pointed out sometimes, maybe in the Mediterranean travel, I forget, but things like people now go fly over to Turkey to have their hair transplanted or teeth done. Is it Turkish teeth, is it, or whatever? I mean, and so nations are looking at very niche places where they can maybe offer something at a very high value, but cost and high value. Is anything like that something which we're going to be looking at?
The honest truth is, at this moment in time, the answer is no. There are areas of particular expertise. We've got a fairly good, Swansea University has a very strong life sciences, for example. Professor Mark Clement is one of the world's authority on lasers, for example. There are areas like this, but I'm not sure that we should be thinking too much about this. Well, I think I've said that what we need essentially is simply an economic development policy where the objective is to create a critical mass of Welsh businesses, and let's take it from there. I think there's a great risk in sort of looking to say, well, we can develop this sector or that sector, when as things stand, there really isn't a sector that we can say, well, that's going to be a runner. It's not at this moment in time.
What about Welsh food produce?
Well, that's exactly it. I think one of the things that I worries me, and I've said this, written about this, is somebody say, you got a scheme presented to government maybe, and because it contains words like blue sky and high tech, then it's got to be a runner, boy. But at the end of the day, we still drink coffee, we still eat bread, we still drink beer, and these are strong multipliers. These are very strong multipliers. Let's not be afraid to say, let's put money into bakeries and breweries. And in fact, just before we went on air, there was a knock at the door. My latest bottle of rum, I'll give them a plug, from Barty Rum in Pembrokeshire. These are growth industries, but it's not sexy is the problem. But at the end of the day, Welsh food is exported. Is it half a billion or something? I don't know the figures. These are growth industries. They're not high tech. They're not whiz bang, but they are growth industries and they're strong multipliers.
Yeah, and I concur with that. I think I always have a wry smile when people say we want to be the next Silicon Valley. So why? Everyone wants to be the next. Why bother with you know, you have to be innovative and stuff, but not everyone can be Silicon Valley. And
absolutely.
I think in work and your strengths you already have, and you know, work with those. The issue, obviously, of creating the kind of, the purpose of a Welsh state is obviously to make the lives of people within Wales better. For many of us, it's to do with me, is to promote, you know, our culture and language as well. There's no point to it, otherwise we may as well stay part of the UK. There's also the question of, obviously, in terms of Wales as part, you know, in terms of how the environment is changing, how we deal with that, and how we build an economy which isn't damaging to the climate. So how do we square that? Or is Wales so now, so post-industrial, we're actually by default becoming green because there's not enough work here or something? I mean, is there one opportunity for Wales in terms of green industry? And two, how do we square the circle? I mean, I think the world is moving towards a situation where people are trying to be more
environmentally conscious. I worry a bit about green. I entirely agree. I think we should be looking at green industries. We should be looking at ways of protecting and developing the environment. There's no two ways about that. But again, I think we can't pick and choose. There is an argument in Wales, for example, there's an argument about insulation. We have lots of old houses, and clearly there's an opportunity there. Issues like this, yes. But I think as well, when my big issue is that I'm getting increasingly cross about debates about gas burners, for example. If you jumped on the M4 this morning, you'd be in a traffic jam stretching from here to Cardiff and back, all throwing muck into the air. Now, that's got to be a green issue. Now, we may well talk about things like, you know, insulating houses, for example, but we've got to do something about transport. I've been invited to speak in Ruthin next month. I can't get there. It's in my country. It's 120 miles away, and I can't get there. I have no choice but to take the car. I can get to Wrexham if I change trains three times. Then I've still got to be met by one of my colleagues in Yes Cymru. That's nonsense. So one of the first things I think we should be looking at is a sensible transport policy. Let's start with that. And we can look at green industries like insulating houses and homes and so forth. But then we go back to multipliers. One of the things that's quite interesting to, you know, if you're sitting on the M4 waiting for the traffic to move by 3 inches an hour, look at the lorries that are coming in. They are bringing in bread and cakes, for God's sake. This is lunacy. I mean, when people say, oh, yeah, big deal, you know, going to build an economy on bread and cakes. Yes, but we're also doing something about the environment because the local baker's making your bread and cakes, not somebody dragging a 32-foot Arctic halfway up the M4. There are, you know, these things knit together.
In terms of, okay, we've touched on the few issues here, and we'll touch the other one, which is Europe. I mean, Yes Cymru doesn't have an official view on being part of the European Union or not. I remember when we started Yes Cymru in February 2016. It was just before the referendum when we decided we wanted to move. In terms of your point of view now, do you think an independent Wales should be in the EU or single currency or outside or whatever?
Oh, I'm a great European. But to me, there's no argument. I can see some of the negative arguments, not the racist arguments. I can see some of the arguments that it's arguably nonsense that you can go to Tesco down the road from where I live and buy tomatoes from Spain, which are cheaper to grow or to sell than Pembroke. Just say that is an issue, and there are, I suppose, some issues about the law, the human rights legislation. From some don't like it. That I think there was a limiting argument. But I'm a great European. I love people in Europe. I love travelling in Europe. I learn from Europe. We are part of Europe, full stop. And we should be a part of Europe. I'm absolutely, totally a European. When asked what I am, I tell people I'm Welsh and European.
Yeah, well, my point of view is, if it's good enough for Estonians, or they fought for their identity and nation for the last 100 years, it's good enough for us. But I mean,
I was, you might have seen a piece I did for Nation Cymru. I was in Estonia in January. Went over on the ferry from Finland. I was humbled. It was cold. I tell you what, I've never been so cold. But we stopped off in the old town, and we had chat with some of the people. There was some traditional dancing and traditional food being passed around. I was humbled, especially when I had a chance to talk to one or two of the older people there who told me about the good old Soviet days. I was humbled by it. Just bear with me a second for our viewers and listeners. I mentioned earlier on about the opportunity to build an economy. There is a concept in economic development known as... Did you get these moments? You can't think of the word.
I get them in both languages because I speak Welsh as well.
My mind's gone blank. Bear with me. It'll come to me in a minute. Organizations, businesses that reach a billion sterling in value within a short space of time, unicorns.
Okay, yeah.
They call it unicorns. Estonia has 10. Estonia has only been independent since 1992. 10 unicorns in proportion to its population is more than China or America in proportion to its our population. Here is a country that is booming, and not the least of it is its size.
Yeah, well, just for the listeners and viewers, Estonia is 3 times the geographical size of Wales, so it's about 60,000 square kilometers, but a third of our population.
Right.
So they're just over, maybe just a bit of third. They were just over a million population. Right. I'll trick this in then, Paul, John Ball. You know, they've had a lot of immigrations out of Estonia since being part of the euro. I think this is one big mistake with the European Union. It was too early to make it easy for people to travel. I understand on a personal level, this is great for young people in Estonia, Latvia, Romania. But I think for those economies, it's been a huge blow. They've lost something like a third of the population, which actually is similar to what Wales has lost. But we have older people moving in. So the numbers look the same, but we have a huge brain drain, which is promoted by the Welsh government as well, I think. So, I mean, how are they dealing with that? Because they have a very small domestic economy, so a million people, a unique language, so that's not transferable. So how are they dealing with issues of, you know, a lot of young people leaving the country? And then, you know, that's a cultural and economic and educational capital loss.
I think that there are a number of issues here. The positive issue, of course, is that they've embraced technology, they've embraced education, they've embraced, interestingly enough, back to where we come from, even flat tax as a way of putting money into the economy.
I thought they introduced flat tax in 1990 because it's a problem with people just not paying
the point that they use a flat tax so that everyone has so many euros before they pay tax. It's a very fair way of taxation. It's also a very interesting and sound way of putting money into the economy. What I'm saying is they've embraced new ideas, technology, free transport, flat tax, higher levels of education. The other side, man, I say it with a smile, I think maybe to some extent the exodus, maybe to some extent, was simply to be, was going to happen anyway. Young people are going to go off and visit Finland and go to universities in Sweden. That was always going to happen because of where they'd come from. At the end of the day, it's only been 30-some-odd years, and it takes time to build these things, even though they've been very successful. These things take time. And we're ahead of that in terms of things like universities and to some extent, opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, the outflow of young people is something which, you know, literally keeps me awake at night. I think is a never discussed because people don't like discussing demography because they think it gets into a dodgy situation, you know, which it can, but then that's true of motorways or anything. But it's a huge issue, and I think we're going into the world the next 10 years. There's been a collapse in terms of birth rate across the whole of the developing world, outside Africa essentially, and up and from Egypt over to North India. So, I mean, it's going to be a fight the next 10, 20 years for everyone to get young people to move to their country. So this is why Canada's opened the borders. This is why Germany let in a million Syrians and a million Ukrainians. So there's, you know, there's humanitarian reasons, but they also need the workforce. And there's now going to be scramble across the world. It's not going to be just Western Europe. Estonia will want to approach and to appeal to young people. Japan, China, if they can get rid of the some of the other problems, obviously, Canada, the USA. So Wales is going out to a very difficult world. You know, the age where European countries could basically do as they wish and knew that people would come to them is over. Because we're now in, and that's before we talk about, you know, if some of these South American countries pick up, like Argentina, Brazil, you can imagine a lot of young people going over there to work, nicer weather and stuff. So, I mean, it's going to be a fight for Wales. We're going to have to fight our corner, not only to make an attractive place for people to stay here, possibly they're going away for a few years and getting a bit of change of scene, but also I think we'll have to get young people here. And how do we do that?
I think your words, Wales is an attractive, Wales must be an attractive place, but it must be an attractive place with opportunity for those who are already here.
Yeah.
I entirely agree with what you're saying about immigration. Interesting, I mean, one of the issues about the health service, allegedly, is that we need, and we do need, you know, nurses in the Philippines and so forth, in the UK as a whole. But of course, that's because we haven't done the education. We haven't spent the money on training nurses. We haven't given the opportunity for people to enter health services and medicine. So the place has to be, our new nation state has to be attractive for those who stay here, and indeed for those who wish to come and live here. But it needs to be an attractive place to live and work, where your children grow up, where you can access the medical profession, where there are opportunities. To me, that's what it's about. But ultimately, that's what it's about. It's got to be a place of opportunity and excitement, if you like.
Yeah, and that's all important. And, you know, this is one way we could be embracing, I think, in general, a lot of automation. You know, why do we want to pay people to do very boring jobs? You know, when we can be getting, and saw something on social media last night, that a robot to clean the toilets. Well, why not? So, you know, why are we paying people to do that? And those people then can be trained to do other more meaningful jobs and at a better wage. So I think the wages people pay are all important in this. This is something actually which was also touched on in the Melbourne Travel in terms of making Wales an attractive place for people to raise their children. We're sort of coming to the end of the discussion, John Ball, but I mean, everyone's going to say we need jobs for young people. But what kind of things could Wales, an independent Wales, be offering young people should be doing now, if we say, but what kind of things would you like to see Wales doing to try and keep or retain or draw back young people to settle here in Wales?
Right. That's an interesting question, which will probably take another hour. Essentially, I think it's about opportunity, it's about education, it's about values. I think we should be the people of Wales, if the young people of Wales, with an opportunity to learn, with an opportunity to access good employment, with an opportunity to access good homes, with an opportunity to visit their friends on organised public transport. And I think that ultimately is the answer, is provide the opportunities in things like education, make the place somewhere you really want to be.
I think with that, we'll finish our conversation. You'll be listening to Dr. John Ball and myself, Sean Jobbins, here on the Radio Yes Cymru podcast, also on YouTube for people who want to watch us. Follow us on your WhatsApp, your social media apps, your podcast apps. Follow us through Yes Cymru and on the YouTube Yes Cymru channel as well. John, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. I'll put some links to some of the things we've raised on the YouTube page. So go over there, there'll be links to some things we touched on. I think a couple of articles you've written in the past about how Wales actually does pay itself. So people listening to this can have some arguments when they go down the pub or whatever and someone says, Wales is too poor, too independent. No, we're not. We are paying away. We're already paying away. And that's before we have the opportunity which independence offers us. Dr. John Ball, once again, thanks for making time to speak to us. And I'm sure
it's been a pleasure.
So, take care.
My pleasure. Yes. 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 Yes.